Merry Christmas, everybody. Hope you're doing well, and thank you for tuning in, for taking some time off from your most likely very busy schedule and engaging in some mental exercises around this time. My name is Henrik. We are based out of Sweden, as you might know. And wherever you are from, we are glad that you're here with us and interested in not only educating yourself, but also engaging in philosophy, questioning the knowledge that we are taught to believe, and also engage in critical thinking whilst listening to alternative and not-so-alternative material. We like to analyze and see through the social engineering and the media talking points designed to train you on how to think. Frankfurt School psychology permeates the control grid, and the system that's there is there to shape your ability to reason and seeks to impose values on you that will disarm your mental capabilities and effectively domesticate you, so that the farmers, the human herders, if you will, can get what they want out of you. Today we're going to focus on a few examples of how the political correct matrix that is all around you is designed to stifle any level of criticism, shut down freedom of speech and debate, and get in the way of not only formulating your own opinion, but also to voice that opinion. And they're trying to make sure that we all fall in line with what they call the same common core belief system. We have Patrick Henningsen with us, who's behind 21st Century Wire, for this discussion, and we'll get further into how the wedge that is political correctness is used to divide us on every single issue and make us fight on every single issue and war with all the other tribes or cults out there that are not ideologically aligned to ours. Well, Merry Christmas, Patrick, and welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Good to talk to you, or maybe it's too controversial to say Christmas now, huh? So we say Happy Holidays instead, I guess.
Yeah, good to be back with you, Henrik. Yeah, you have to beware of the politically correct police these days. They're at every turn, it seems like everything's falling afoul of the politically correct new culture police we've got. So, yeah, happy holidays. I don't know how long that's going to last for, but
exactly.
Next year it'll be something else.
Exactly, they'll take that one over as well. Well, it's a good note to begin on, I think, because I saw, when I visited 21stCenturyWire.com today, I saw you had picked up on the story that I unfortunately happened to see, a day or so ago before this, about the Duck Dynasty guy, Phil Robertson. And I've actually watched a couple of seasons of it, and it's a kind of funny show. It has, apparently for some reason, has one of the biggest viewership in America, which I guess I don't quite understand, but it's that point of it's a novelty. The family is kind of odd in that way, and I think people are watching it like it's a museum exhibit, like it's something that's kind of times old and it's kind of going out the door. But nonetheless, he made a comment in GQ magazine of all places, and now they've just completely gone after this guy. What do you make of the story, Patrick?
This is the number one story right now in the United States, and internationally, it's got a lot of traction, as evidenced by the fact that you're in Sweden and you've heard about it as well, and you know about the show. But you know, yes, it's a reality show, and reality shows dominate the American television scene in the last few years for various reasons. But so Phil Robertson is the patriarch of this family, which many people would class as a redneck family, kind of Louisiana-esque. Bayou, hunting, anyway, Christian as well. So, Phil Robertson made an interview with GQ magazine. What was interesting was this was, in a men's magazine. As we know, GQ is a men's magazine. And it was kind of a hit piece they did on him. If you read the article in GQ, you'll see that they really kind of went after him, in a very condescending way. And he made his personal opinions known about his Christianity, his belief in the Bible, and also his sexual preferences. And he was quite explicit, by some people's terms anyway, not by GQ terms really, but he's quite explicit saying that he preferred one anatomical organ over another orifice. And apparently this just set the gender activist community alight and have gone absolutely full force pressuring A&E, Arts and Entertainment Television, which carry the show The Duck Dynasty, pressuring them to have him removed off the air. And so they've caved in, of course, and put him on a hiatus, which means he's in limbo, which means he'll actually they'll actually drop the show eventually. But so it's really interesting because this appeared in a print magazine. It wasn't said on television. And if you read interviews in print, you know, whether they're in the, you know, GQ or Vice magazine or the Rolling Stone, you know, or the New Yorker for that matter, or the London Review of Books, you'll see that people are tend to be a lot more candid in print interviews, and there's a reason for that, and that's tradition of print. And the gay and lesbian community did not attack GQ. What's interesting is GQ magazine is published by Condé Nast. Condé Nast Publishing being one of the biggest, if not the biggest magazine publisher in the world, whose titles include Vogue, Cosmopolitan, and many other women's titles, by the way. This is probably why they weren't attacking Condé Nast Publishing for publishing this piece, which was, again, a hit piece to kind of make him look a bit crazy by the writer who wrote the article. And we have the article text linked from 21st Century Wire with a very good commentary by Sean Helton, who's a writer for 21st Century Wire. And we pointed out the obvious here, which is that, you know, if this article had been in Playboy magazine, you know, which you see many of these types of interviews in magazines like Playboy for decades, basically nobody would have made anything of it because no one obviously wants to be publicly admitting that they have bought a copy or read Playboy magazine. But because it is in GQ, it somehow got transferred into this sort of television sphere because of the show. There's an obvious problem here, and aside from the fact that all the pundits who are attacking this Phil Robertson, this old family patriarch redneck, don't even watch the show and would never watch the show, but seem to all be experts of it, and you see them on CNN all lined up giving their opinions on something they've never watched before. They've probably heard of it, and now they're sort of making like, oh, I'll never watch that show again. They've actually never seen it. And GQ is a men's magazine which is read almost exclusively, dare we say, by straight men. Okay?
Right.
So it's not as if this is would be considered invasive material to anybody. Now, he's the bottom line here is this person is expressing one man's opinion of his personal opinion, his personal preferences, but he's fallen foul of this kind of tyranny of political correctness. And where the roots of this come from, political correctness is like, it's like a wedge, basically. And you can take that wedge, it's an amazing widget, you can take that widget and you can just put it in between any sort of demographic and you can divide it, okay?
Yeah.
So if you take an age group, you stick political correctness in, you can divide it by gender, you can further subdivide that by race, you can divide that by sexual lifestyle, you can divide that by sort of, you know, various other compartments of politics, whether it be an issue like abortion or many of these other sort of what we call wedge issues in America. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. And this is basically, this is cultural Marxism is what political correctness is.
Yeah.
It's cultural Marxism. And you can see the, if you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, which I've turned quite a few people onto in the last few months, you'll see that it even talks explicitly about some of these concepts. And there's an excellent article that we've linked to, and it says that cultural Marxism or political correctness says that all history is determined by power, by which groups defined in terms of race, sex, etc., have power over which other groups. Okay, this is essentially cultural Marxism, the fundamentals of it. And we only have to go back a few weeks, and Oprah Winfrey made a statement on the BBC, I believe, when she was promoting her latest film, I think, called The Butler, which was in cinemas and got some quite a lot of critics giving it, you know, great reviews, some not so great reviews. But she said in an interview in the BBC, she said that basically there's a certain section of people that are just racist, and they'll never change. And the only thing that can happen is that And I'll quote her, there are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die. For the world to be free of racism, these people have to die.
Yeah.
Now, you can interpret that any way you want, but our point here is that we'll let Oprah say that, and I've got no problem with her saying that, because that's her view, and that's how she expresses her view to her constituency. But, and so that's there's a level of tolerance there. That's her, as an American, she's an American, I'm an American, I'd say that's her free speech, that's her right.
Right.
Even though it's a total sweeping political generalization that she's made, she has a right to say that. And so does Phil Robertson.
That's
right. Has a right to say he prefers V's over A's, you know. And so it's the free speech thing, freedom of expression thing, is a two-sided coin. It's a two-sided door. So you can't restrict it for one group and not for another, because if it doesn't exist in its totality, then it's not actually a right.
That's right.
It's not actually a right. Therefore, it ceases to exist. And so this is what the sort of politically correct Nazis don't understand, is that if they try to curtail somebody's freedom of expression, then they're actually curtailing, they're writing their own epitaph for the future. Okay. And,
yep.
And you know, we saw Berlin pre-Nazi party, pre-Chancellor Exchequer, Adolf Hitler, was a very gay culture in Berlin. And the subculture was there and everything. And still, even in the National Socialist framework, they targeted everybody. They targeted gypsies, gays, Catholics. I mean, the list was endless, and no one was exempt from the list, it seemed, except for pure blood, those who claim they're pure blood Aryans. So, this is what the politically correct mobs don't understand, is if they don't stand up for the rights of even a redneck like Phil Robertson, they're writing their own, obituary down the road. They're helping to bring on a much wider tyranny, because you don't know what the future is going to be like. A wave of Christian right-wing conservatism could sweep over America like a tidal wave one day, and all of those people who helped to weaken the Bill of Rights, including these particular gay and lesbian activists, to shut down and shut up and remove from television an old guy like Phil Robertson, whether they agree with him or not, whether they find him offensive or not, then that will come back to bite them in the future.
Well, exactly. Very good point. It's I'm just fed up with it. I'm frankly sick of this type of ostracizing people and the way that they go after these people as well. I mean, okay, so there's a number of points here we need to talk about. First of all, is clarification of what you just said there, that the fact that they do not go after GQ, but they go after the TV show that happened to have him on. Is that because, the TV show is having too much, I don't know, is it influencing people? Is it, or do you think people are watching it to like, because they think they're making fun of them ultimately, so that's why people are drawn to the show, and therefore, but if that was the case, then they would be proud to have it still running, right? Because then it would do the job for the propaganda masters to try to show that these so-called backwards, you know, people, just because they're out hunting and read the Bible, then that would be the worst thing you can do in the world, right?
What you said makes perfect sense, but the problem is, you know, politically correct mobs don't think, it's not an irrational mob, it's an irrational mob. And it's to me, there's no difference than politically correct mobs who are going around basically wanting to take this guy off of the television airwaves, because with TV gives credibility to someone's existence, whether they're a lunatic or, you know, it gives them a presence in the media, and therefore they have an audience, and they'll have a constituency of fans no matter how extreme they are. And you just look at the whole raft of reality shows, and that is the case. And you look at some really ridiculous ones like New Jersey Housewives, or, you know, just totally garish, totally gaudy. They have a fan base. there's people that actually aspire to be like the New Jersey housewives. Okay, even as, even though the majority of Americans don't, and the rest find it entertaining, and that's the same with Duck Dynasty. Okay, so in a way that the politically correct mob is scoring and shooting an own goal here, but it's incredible how they organize, you know, how they operate, and it's not a rational thing. It's very irrational. It's very short term thinking. They only see the politically. The political capital, the chips, let's say on the political poker table, they see a stack of chips that they can reach out and grab. They just grab them and they don't think about what's down the road. And that is the nature of this kind of cultural Marxism. It's very short-term thinking and it ends up being a long-term problem. Because obviously if you disassemble basic rights in a sort of constitutional democracy or constitutional republic, you start disassembling that. Then what you're left with is something that you can't just rebuild. You know, the state, right. the state has a certain inertia, and we see this with a lot of things. We can even transfer this, to a lot of other areas, with regards to free speech and freedom of expression. So it's, to me, disingenuous at best, but it's very, very, typical of, you know, the ultra-feminist movement is the same. The way that people go for the issue of abortion, which is, you know, not related to the Duck Dynasty, but in the context of Christianity and people who follow the Bible and so forth, mm-hmm. even Catholics, the issue of, say, defending a woman's right to choose what she does to her body, this has been taken to another level in the last few decades. This is now an aggressive campaign to attack. It's almost like to attack anybody who opposes abortion, okay, which is in the end a personal choice, okay.
Yeah.
And it's even worse. It's promoting abortion as if it's almost like it's become a form of birth control. So that's what happens with this kind of compartmentalization of the sort of the political spectrum that America is suffering so badly from. It's so subdivided. America's never been more fractured and divided as it is right now. Even though most people can agree on most fundamental things, even between the redneck and the gay and lesbian, person, they probably agree on a number of things that would be classed as Christian values, basic right and wrong. But these wedge issues, which politicians absolutely try to squeeze as much essence out of, and as much political capital out of in order to win votes, curry favor with certain, you know, broadcast media organizations and lobbies as well, very active lobbies. So, you know, what is democracy? Is it who shouts the loudest becomes the majority, or is it true majority rule or consensus among the majority? I mean, in America, it's very difficult to tell what this actually means right now. It's really become so confusing for some people that they are unable to really properly analyze it. They just, the tools have just gone out the window as far as analysis goes. It's, a lot of people are lost with it, and so they just tend to basically balkanize and coagulate into wherever they feel that that's the winning. Americans are obsessed with being on the winning side, being on the winning public opinion poll. You know, they don't want to ever admit they voted for someone that lost or backed an issue that didn't come out in the polls as the majority, so they're obsessed with being on the winning side. So this is the problem right now. And it's so skewed. And you've got the other problem is CNN and MSNBC and some of these networks. And Fox did the same thing in the reverse for the last decade during the Bush administration. But all these networks are heavily politicized.
Oh, yeah.
To a ridiculous degree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a couple of things here that we can focus on. And I mean, as you said, it's a, they try to simplify the issue by focusing on the most common, you know, denominator, basically the focus on the differences. And then they take that to the extreme. And this is done in order to divide and conquer, of course. But let's just look at what he actually says to see how this can be so incredibly offensive. I mean, just as you said, it's the First Amendment in America. He's voicing his opinion. It's in print. He says the following. It seems like, to me, a vagina as a man would be more desirable than a man's anus. That's just me. I'm just thinking there's more there. She's got more to offer. I mean, come on, dudes. You know what I'm saying. But hey, Sin, it's not logical, my man. It's just not logical. So he's not saying that he hates anyone who is a homosexual. He doesn't say that he hates gays. He doesn't advocate violence against those who have a different preference of where they want to, you know, stick it. Something that's ultimately a private matter in people's bedrooms, right? But how this can be turned into like a witch hunt of this old man is just, it's unbelievable to me. It's like, it really just shows that the character of the cultural times that we are in right now. And I don't know what to say about it. It's just ridiculous, you know?
Well, some of the comments are interesting. I knew that we were going to absolutely hammer it when we published this article. So I told Sean, the author, to brace yourself for impact. But basically, the detractors are saying that this is hate speech, and this person should not be allowed on television. And we need to basically protect America from this idiot, because these idiots are destroying the world.
Yeah.
So this is coming from the activist side.
Yeah.
So I think that the lesbian gay community are sick to death of the hatred and ignorance and et cetera. And it just goes on and on. You see all these comments on this article, and they're not seeing the big picture here. They're not even, most of them didn't even read the interview, which is pretty common these days.
Exactly.
People,
they don't
actually take a side. Yeah. They'll take a side, but they don't actually look at the material, which they're taking a side on. So that's another big problem. But, you know, I did a speech on political correctness at the University of Edinburgh a couple of months ago. It was during a debate. And I pointed out the obvious that, you know, that political correctness is a tool. These things are not, they don't just come about organically. These things are developed, through academia. They're developed in think tanks. They are part of what is called applied behavioral psychology. And you can read this, and governments are spending a lot of money these days, especially the UK government and the American government. I don't know as much about what's happening in Europe, but they're spending a lot of money on applied behavioral psychology, and also they're exporting this expertise, we'll call it, overseas as well.
Yeah.
And what they want to do is change the way people behave. And this is basically a weaponized version of psychology. So the idea is to change your behavior without you knowing that it's been changed. And of course, the first thing you do is you need to change the language and the meaning of the language. That's the first part. That's cultural Marxism 101. And on top of that, then the behavior changes come, whereby people, they've done a brilliant job with this in America, by the way, where people believe that, you know, for instance, we can say on your show, because most of your listeners are familiar, that most Americans think that the Federal Reserve Bank is a federal bank. It's a public bank.
Yeah.
It's owned by the people. It's, of course, it's not. It's private. It's a privately owned bank run for profit. But they've, through the change of the language, calling it the Federal Reserve Bank gives it that definition in most people's minds, as they've appropriated words. They do this through lots of different things, and they say that, you know, your taxes are building roads, and your taxes are building government buildings and schools and hospitals, and that's not actually true. But through applied behavioral psychology over a century, they've managed to get people to really buy into this. So people have no problem paying the federal income tax, because they believe that this is what's keeping the country together. And they don't realize that actually what they're paying is going to the Federal Reserve, and it's being put against the debt that the U.S. government has with the Federal Reserve for lending it all those dollars. But on a smaller scale, it's getting you to comply with things like Obamacare, or getting you to comply with buying a TV license to watch the BBC in the UK, a TV tax, essentially, to fund the BBC, which is a state-run media organ, which is pumping out basically state lines on state policies and getting people to kind of agree and have some, feel like they're part of a consensus. It's a softer version of Soviet state-run television is all it is. but it's, you get the letters through the post, you must pay, it's written a certain way, that's all applied behavioral psychology. This has been weaponized in the mainstream media, and it has been developed through some departments that people don't realize. I'll give you an example. One of them is the military. The military has inserted a number of politically correct terms to describe what goes on in the battlefield, what goes on behind the doors of a detainment center. So they've come up with some very beautiful words like rendition. What is rendition? It's kidnapping. And here's another word, collateral damage. What is collateral damage? That's dead women and children, innocent civilians. Friendly fire, that's shooting your own soldiers by accident. And they have all these terms that they've come out with, and non-combatants, high-value detainees, surgical strikes, and, you know, it's endless.
Yep.
So they weaponize the language so that people can feel no longer attached or can relate with the facts on the ground. And that is a kind of very heavy version of cultural Marxism. That's kind of like ironclad fascist cultural Marxism. Okay.
It's Orwellian too, by the way. It's changing really the meaning of the language or the words. I mean, we have that coming out through, it's been a long-standing science. I mean, people like Frank Luntz is certainly not the first one, but he's one of the more successful ones in what he termed words that work. He did these focus groups to see how they're impacted by the choice of the words, if it, you know, goes towards a negative or a positive connotation, how you spin it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if Orwell had inserted the term political correctness in his early works, I mean, we might be living in a different world, but he's essentially talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Newspeak, doublespeak, and, you know, you read Animal Farm, which I read on the air on my radio show a couple of weeks ago. I just read a passage about, you know, at the end of a story when Napoleon came out and had all the pigs had learned how to walk on their hind legs and paraded around the barn, and all the other animals were just sitting there like, what the hell is going on? And then they all go to the back where the seven commandments used to be written, and of course there's only one commandment left. They've rewritten that, and it says, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. And that is the sort of ushering in from the sort of early collectivist formation in the Animal Farm to the sort of, you know, really hardcore fascism.
Yeah.
Which emerged out of that. And this is the danger in that people aren't usually aware of, because collectivism, in other words, everyone's equal and everyone should be treated equal and given the same and treated the same and so forth, and nobody should be excelling too much higher than the rest. It's sold as some kind of a utopian ideal. And you see that in the films like Zeitgeist. People who aren't really in the alternative media will always, I try to talk to people when I'm out and about as much as possible, people who don't even read my website or anything like it. And a lot of people have seen Zeitgeist,
right?
Funny enough.
Yeah.
Okay, that don't even, you know, have never heard Red Ice Radio, but they've heard Zeitgeist. And they've watched Zeitgeist, and they said, what about Zeitgeist? It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? And I said, well, Zeitgeist has at the end this, it ends with this idea of this green utopia where everything's perfectly rationed out and everyone gets exactly what they need and everything's perfect. And unfortunately, in the human experience, this has not been successful throughout history, and it's kind of, many people have visioned it, some have tried it. Essentially what you end up with is a cult, and Zeitgeist is a cult. It was designed as a cult, and it achieved the kind of following as a cult. That's exactly what it is. And you see lots of, we're in the age of cults right now, more than ever.
Yeah.
We're in the age of cults, where people want to rally behind a person or a film or a book, like the Shades of Grey cult. That was a book, a salacious novel that mothers and daughters were reading secretly the last couple of years. You have various other personalities that put themselves out. And what you find with cults is if you criticize or you try to be critical in your thinking of analyzing the cult and what the cult is producing, cult members will attack you from places that you can't even see.
Sure.
They just appear out of nowhere. It's incredible. And so it's like this kind of defense immune system that the cult has, where its followers just can see no wrong in the cult. And we have that in politics as well. We have parties or cults now. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party in America are cults. The Democratic Party is heavily fused and heavily reliant on applied behavioral psychology. They've invested more. That side of the political spectrum has invested a lot more than the sort of blunt force version of the sort of, you know, neoconservative Bush Republican side, which is a totally different way to achieve and to take power and keep power. But essentially, they're underneath. They're both the same. And so, if you attack the cult, if you attacked Obama in the early days of his presidency, people would just come out of nowhere and just rip you to pieces. Okay, so, and it's a cult, and so is what they're trying to fashion people into, their little tribes. In American culture, like 30-something, 40-something, Generation X, Y, Z, gay, lesbian, etc.
Yeah.
What they've done there is they've created cults. They have symbols. They have flags. They have organizations. They have figureheads. They have cult leaders. And people will defend them almost with their life and do very irrational things in the process.
It's tribalism. It's going backwards. That's what's so funny about this. As we get a world government, what they've chosen, what the elite has chosen to focus on or to give to the people is a mentality that actually goes back into, it's not even nationalism anymore. We know that's out the door because that's too complicated. Let's not do that. Let's focus on, just as you say, have a global structure of government, ultimately, where you, doesn't matter where you go on the planet, you will be subjugated to the same rules that, as is everywhere else. But, exactly, you'll have your allegiances with whatever cult or tribe that you happen to identify with or be, even placed into a certain degree. And that is what's going to keep the conflict also going on the smaller level so that the people never, ever will focus, have time or energy or efforts to look up into the, towards the eye in the sky and say, all right, there's a bigger plan here. There's a bigger boss controlling a central, government, regulating, controlling everything. So it's done for the purposes of keeping people to a certain degree entertained, but also just occupied with constant petty conflicts, pretty much, right?
Sure. And right now, one of the things that has enabled this to really take shape is this idea of victimization, which is a major feature in the politically correct matrix. Okay, so out of these concepts comes a careful selection process as to those who can be viewed as true victims. So this is a kinder and gentler ideology we're talking about, but it's fatally flawed. Because the very groups who are seeking acknowledgement for suffering tend to be the least understanding of conflicting points of view. Okay, we have examples all around us of this, but with the victimization of everyone claims in this new politically correct world to be a victim of something. Okay, I'm a minority. I'm a victim of this. Even we had MSNBC's Melissa Harris Perry.
Jesus Christ, don't bring her up.
She's a race expert, okay? They have many of them at MSNBC, but she's the female one. And so she's come out basically swinging at the idea of Santa Claus this week, saying that until Santa Claus breaks through the color barrier, then it really can't be accepted as some kind of a cultural icon in American society, because it's not fair that Santa, you can't say that Santa was white because maybe he was black, maybe Santa was a Native American Indian.
And then this
can very easily be extended to Jesus Christ.
So
you can, there's the argument that some people have with Jesus is, he's an Arab. No, he's fair skinned. No, Jesus was, from us sub-Saharan Africa. He's black, So you get this argument here. But the point is, you go to Nigeria and you go into a Christian church in Nigeria and there's the white Jesus on the wall. So clearly the Africans aren't too concerned with the color of Jesus, but the cultural Marxists are very concerned with the color of Jesus, because by inserting that in as a wedge issue, they can get people then to, they can further subdivide and society into more and smaller compartments. And that is the goal of cultural Marxism. It's to create society like a big factory floor where you have different departments and everyone's stuck in their department and they can't come out. And they just toil away in your little corner there culturally,
yep.
And everything will be fine, you know.
Sorry to interrupt you. Let me just play this clip of, because it's an extension to what we're talking about, and I heard it a while back. I actually missed it when it was big news, but let me just play this. And for those of you who don't know, this is MSNBC's host, one of their hosts, Melissa Harris-Perry, on a promo there, so they called Lean Forward, and the nightmare has arrived. Listen to this, everybody.
Sure.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
Oh, yeah, Lean Forward, MSNBC. Lean forward and, bend over, and then we'll do what we want with you. Have you heard that clip before? I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What the hell is that, you know?
that's classic doublespeak. If you listen to her at the beginning, she says, you know, your children are yours and totally yours, but also they're actually ours. They belong to the community. She said both things and shoved both ideas down the same pipeline. And at the end, she says, then we can't make, you know, we can make better investments, you know, which is even more confusing to sort of like muddy the waters more. So she basically, and this is what these types of people do, is they cram everything in. It doesn't matter how it stacks up or if it makes any sense. They cram it right in there and they just basically pipe it right off to you and right into your brain.
Yeah.
And most people can't be separated, and so it really comes down then to their personality. In other words, the annotation, how they speak, what they look like, you know, how it's produced in a sort of TV format, how effective those ideas are to getting into the subconscious. And essentially what she's saying there is that your children belong to the state.
Yeah.
Because there is no collective, there is no community. What these kind of ultra liberals are, their idea of the future is this kind of fusion of community and state, and it's communitarianism, and where everything is policed by the community, everything is regulated in a technocracy, everything is formatted, and so forth. So you can take this to the extreme, and look at a lot of examples through history and literature as well, as to how this is going to be borne out. And it's not a pretty world.
It always leads to mayhem and just, and well, ultimately bloodshed. I mean, it's every time you create a massive centralized system, even if it might be, which it usually isn't, but even if it might be well for a little time, for a little period, you soon enough have the same problem of human nature and those people who we haven't, you know, in that regard, recognized to focus on and realize that there are people among us who don't have other people's best interest at heart, and they will ascend into these systems, into these structures, take over as an administrative force, take over, you know, politically or through any kind of power that they can to utilize the system and use it against other people. And there we go. I mean, and it's just what you said as well. If we extend it to like the Venus projects as well, you know, well intended perhaps. But again, ultimately, we have a scenario where it will stifle human development. And you would have to preface that before people get too, you know, upset with you. But the fact is that when you have a mechanized and ultimately kind of computerized system taking over the fundamental drives of what should be attributed to human drives instead, you're going to hold other people back for the fact that you want to create equality. But when we begin to deny other people to reach heights that others might not. I don't understand why people don't see this, that ultimately that is what's going to, it's going to do a disservice to the entire human race because, I mean, whether we like it or not, inventors, they acted on their own. They had, you know, independent individual creativity. They got a spark of something and they created something which has benefited millions of people. Think about someone like Steve Jobs, for example. I mean, Do you think a committee can could attain what the inventions that he had under his lifetime made, and ultimately, again, the fruits of his work, if you will, is something that's just been passed down to the masses and something that has been complete, incredibly beneficial. I mean, okay, sure, you have a Big Brother aspect to Apple too, but I'm talking about the actuality of the technology, of how it's connected people and communication and everything else. And it seems like that understanding is not there, that there are beneficial aspects to people being individuals in a system like this, Patrick.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the sort of founding documents of modern democracy, as imperfect as it is, you look at the Magna Carta, you look at the text in the U.S. Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, for instance, you look at this, these are basically living, they should be, anyway, they're written to be living, breathing documents. In other words, they're written in such a way which all good literature and all good thought put down on paper for the ages tends to have this quality, which is that it's amazing that it can almost live and breathe with the times. And it itself can be a mirror, an accurate mirror, for whatever time frame it's being, is reflected off it. So in the case of, this Duck Dynasty, Phil Robertson controversy in America, this brings up, it might feel like salt in the wound for some people, but it brings up an important, a necessary point at this particular time in history in the debate, which is that we have to fight for our basic rights. They're not going to be administered by the internet, in an automated system of a technocratic government. That they're going to be written on a piece of paper, which is going to sit there, whether it's behind a glass case or whether you've got a copy of it on your desk, which I do. This is a living, breathing document, and you have to fight for everything in there. And that's why people need to grow up, grow up, basically. Americans, those who are caught on the wrong side of this debate, in my opinion, need to grow up.
It's as simple as that, right? And again, the most important point here as well is to reemphasize that if we do not defend other people's right to voice their own opinions, then soon enough, you might be in the comfortable zone right now, but soon enough, they will come after what it is that you like to discuss or talk about, or your opinion, whatever you happen to think is important to discuss. Soon enough, they will cut in the right end, they'll cut more in the left end, more in the right, more in the left, etc., all the way until we're boxed into a very narrow paradigm, and we have nothing. You can't basically say anything, or you'll be thrown in jail eventually. Is that the type of world people want? I don't think so, but yet they'd like to understand that you have to let other people have their opinions and to be able to voice them. Otherwise, it's ultimately where we're going to end up, right? How do people not see that?
Well, it's the people who, the reason the nanny state, Big Brother, Big Sister, the reason the nanny state has been allowed to progress to the point where it has is because there's just quite a lot of people that want to be taken care of by the state. They want the state to make all the decisions for them.
Yeah.
They want the state to decide what culture is going to be, what language is going to be, what's going to be right, who's going to be the victim, who's going to not be the victim, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. they want the state to decide that, not you. And there are still people out there who want to take that responsibility for themselves. So these are the people that have decided they want to grow up intellectually. They don't want the nanny state to tell them what's right, what's good, what's bad for them, what's this, what's that. And so we can see the migration now is when these issues, these hot point issues come up in the media, which might not mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things like the Duck Dynasty, but it's a hot point issue, and you can see the migration of people into their camps. And those who are basically crying to the nanny state, saying, help us, look, like a little kid does on the playground.
Yeah.
Go, teacher, teacher.
I'm going to go tell,
He threw dirt in my eyes. And just sit there and cry and cry and cry until someone comes and says, oh, are you okay? Yes, we're going to punish him for you.
Yeah.
You feel better now. That's the nanny state. It's the same mentality. And some people are still in that mentality. And they feel more comfortable in a collective But I'm quite happy to basically take on, you know, anybody's ideas. And I'll give you a perfect, this is a prime example here. I went to an International Stop the War Coalition anti-war conference in London 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, on the headline speakers were, Jeremy Scahill, the, renowned author of Democracy Now! Fame and his new documentary film called The Dirty Wars, and Owen Jones, a young socialist who writes for the Independent newspaper in Britain, and Mother Agnes from Syria, Mother Agnes Mariam, who came out after the chemical weapons attacks in Damascus and started questioning some of these YouTube videos that had come up that the government was relying upon as evidence to say, look, all these innocent children have been killed by sarin gas in Damascus. Well, these two headline speakers, Owen Jones and Jeremy Scahill, threatened to boycott the conference if Mother Agnes was allowed to speak.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, Jeremy Scahill would not give a public reason for it. He said publicly he would not be attending if she was on the podium. And Owen Jones tried to give an explanation but ended up just not doing it on his blog, trying to get the easy way out. So Mother Agnes let them all off the hook and decided it was too controversial. She didn't want to be a party to the controversy. She backed off and let everybody off the hook. But Stop the War Coalition, this great anti-war organization, didn't defend Mother Agnes. And my point here is...
Is it because she's a Catholic or something? Catholic nun?
No. I believe, and I wrote about this with the UK column, which is in this edition, and I believe that both Jeremy Scahill and Owen Jones are somehow defending the government line, the original government line, which is that there must be regime change in Syria by hook or crook. And the assigning guilt to President Assad for those chemical weapons attacks is a very key point in the justification for regime change, because the story in Syria is far from over, even though there's been a detente at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The story is far from over. And so those two have positioned themselves through their personal interests and what they do and who they work for. And perhaps Jeremy Scahill will have a follow-up to The Dirty Wars, and it's going to deal with Syria, and it might feature the chemical weapons issue. That's why he could not be on the same podium as her. And my point to these two gentlemen are, one who's American, one who is British, is that you can't go into a country like Britain on a public forum and boycott the organizers to drop a speaker. You should be able, in a country that supposes to have free speech and expression, the foundation or birthplace of modern Western democracy, you should be able to go up and defend your point of view.
Exactly.
With anybody.
Yeah.
Even if it's Saddam Hussein on the podium, you should be able to defend your point of view up on that podium. And if you have problems with another person's argument, you should be able to tear it down.
Yeah.
And they should have to defend themselves. And that is called open debate. That is called an open forum. And that's exactly so. And those two, Scahill and Owen Jones, are basically trying to leverage the weight of their star power to shut down someone whose conclusions run contrary to are different from theirs. So this is a perfect example, and everyone just let it happen.
Wow. Yeah, you know, and again, go to the organizers. You know, to take it on that level. You know, yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting.
So in this modern day and age, you should be able to, it doesn't matter what the point of view is, if you really believe in a free society, you should be able to get up and defend your ideas, which when I did this politically correct presentation to the university students, I absolutely got hammered, you know.
And
these are not stupid kids, you know, these are all very smart kids, and 23, 24 years old, very well educated, could put cogent arguments together, and were firing them at me like a barrage of Katusha rockets. And, I made an argument about why they changed the word actress to actor. So women ceased to become actresses a few years ago and became actors. And I made an argument like I thought there was a certain amount of prestige for a woman to have the title as actress, and that was stripped away from them. And people treated me like I was Christopher Hitchens. You know, I was just an absolute, you know, phantom, you know, up there. And but I kind of came, they came around at the end because I explained where I was coming from. And I said, why should women have to compete with men equally on the same thing? Why can't women just be women and men be men?
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be a person? Why can't it be a woman or a man? Why does it just have to be a person? Because as we know from science that men and women are not actually identical.
That's just a fact. You know, we can, do hoops and everything you want around that. But the fact is that there are, it shows really how bad things have gotten in that environment where you actually deny the very physicality that is in front of your eyes, the biology. You're like, you're turning your back on it and say, nope, that's it. I mean, and that's the epitome of doublespeak, of denying, you know, what the reality that's in front of you, right? They've got to be real proud of what they've actually accomplished and achieved at this stage that most people are denying these things, you know?
Sure. And, you know, and I'm sitting there as a kind of voice of, a voice from the past or something,
right?
To, to exactly. a whole room of university students who have been absolutely skull plugged with this from probably primary school.
Yeah.
You know, 10 or 15 years of indoctrination. I was indoctrinated with quite a lot going to state schools, which is mainly political indoctrination and indoctrination about what my history of my country was and my country's role in the world. So it took me most of my adult life to peel that away. So when you're talking to people that are at the peak of their higher education, say at age 23, they've got 10 or 15 years behind them of new indoctrination that I didn't even have.
Good point. Yeah.
And so it is quite a thing to overcome, to find some way that you can communicate without all of this interference, all this politically correct interference, which is in the way.
Yeah.
And people don't realize it's invaded all, various parts of their lives and, in places that not always for the better. No, of course not.
And the engineering level now is so skillful, and just the onslaught of information and propaganda at every turn, and from the entertainment to the education to the literature. I mean, it's all inclusive. It's ubiquitous basically. But again, the fact is that these purposes, no matter how people perceive this or for the well-intendedness of it, it just gleams of contradictions within it to me, as looking in at this from the outside. I mean, because even just the basic outline, that wouldn't it be demeaning, to make those kinds of classifications, for example, then that as a woman, we have to take the prerequisite that you're not going to perform as well in that regard as a man, and therefore we should cater to those needs. I mean, there's also these kinds of things that's contained within the political correct philosophy that you think that people would react against or something like that. But it doesn't. It seems to be very much just run from central command, and the tenets of whatever it's entailed at the time are not questioned at all. Right. That's really what this is about. Not questioning any of these ideas, but just accepting them for the gospel that is, right?
Yeah, and worse, being attacked for using the wrong words. I'll give you an example, and I told this to quite a few different groups of people when I was doing the public speaking circuit this past summer, and I said a story I remember back about, I don't know, it was about 10, 12 years ago, and we had all the residents in the building I was living were quite well aware that there was one flat in particular that was being basically run as a kind of like a crack den or a junkie sort of, a shooting gallery, as they call it, heroin crack.
Right.
And my neighbor had their stereo stolen. And so... it was kind of immediately people knew who might have been the culprit. You know, even though you know these people and they live in your building, you're kind of still on friendly terms with them, and you feel sorry for them because of the plight that they're in. Still, they still, broke into your property or stole your bike or whatever. They cease to become a person with chemical dependency issues. All of a sudden, they're a junkie again, because when you've been affected by it, you can no longer call them someone with chemical dependency issues. But that's the way the New World Order wants you to still view them, even yep. though they've robbed you, they've abused you. They're still able to retain their victim status. But we used to call them junkies. You know, yep. 20 years ago, yep. 30 years ago. And there was nothing wrong with it back then, because that's what they were. But politically correct language is designed to hide the empirical. It's designed to hide what's really there. It's to put a sheen over reality.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And that's exactly what we see time and time again through various rebranding of terms and languages and so forth. You know, they used to call it swingers, you know, wife swapping in the 70s became swingers in the 80s, and now it's called alternative lifestyles.
You know? Right, exactly.
But it's still wife swapping.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it's unbelievable. But no, it's a very good point. It's there to put this kind of just sheen over your perception of reality. It literally is the veiling. It's not the unveiling of reality, showing it in the bare. You know, kind of raw essence that it is, but it's there to put that, like, you know, wax you know, on the lens kind of feel. It's just to gloss everything out, smooth out those edges. Nothing's going to hurt anymore. No one's going to be able to offend you. And soon enough, we're going to walk around with those really friendly police officers, like in THX. No one is going to hurt you. It's going to be all right. We're here to take care of you, you know, and then everyone is building they're building the police force of these robots. That's what they're doing. I mean, we're not far off, really. I mean, it's, oh my God, Jesus.
No, we're not far off. We're kind of right in the middle of it right now.
Yeah.
This is a really important time, and it's really important for people to sort of really identify what the problem is, and also to, I think it's time that people take it upon themselves to make their views known if they disapprove of this, or to, you know, a backlash wouldn't go amiss right now socially. And but to do that, you need to be able to define and know exactly what it is which is your nemesis. And so then we have to revert and defer to some of our great minds of the 20th century to help us to find the way. So we do need to revisit books like Animal Farm and 1984 and Dostoevsky and many other great writers that have put forward some great ideas in the 20th century to help us to know where we're at right now, because these things go in cycles. And we were in the golden age in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. 90s kind of waning a little bit, but that was the golden age where pretty much anything went, and you can just get away with anything, and you could put something crazy out there and you wouldn't be locked up for it in the West, in the West anyway,
right?
In America specifically. And that golden age is becoming more and more constricted. And this is the characteristic of a society which is closing society. And ironically, we go to places like China and other formerly very repressed countries that are in a process of opening up. So we have this bipolar world where we're closing in the West, and other countries, even Russia, is opening up. And so, you know, we have to ask ourselves, which side of this equation would we like to be on? So George Soros is spending billions of dollars with the Open Society Institute in an attempt to open up all these various societies through these color revolutions around the world. But while our societies are contracting, our rights are becoming less and less each day within the foundations of so-called Western democracy. This is the greatest irony of the early 21st century, and that's the battleground which we see right now. And we need to be able to identify it, to know, first admit that it's happening, and then to know where the sort of flashpoints are. And I'll tell you, the big part of it is language. You really have to reject some of this language. And then take it and throw it right back at wherever it came from. because that is the number one control mechanism. Everything is done through language and through legalese. And the language is normally developed for legal reasons. They test this out in the military theater. They need to develop new terms so that politicians won't be legally liable for the sort of crimes that they're committing that are breaking laws. So they come up with new names, technocratic names, in order to give them a legal out so that nothing, laws on the books don't even, you know, refer to what their actions are taking, which are criminal, because they've redefined their actions as with new words and new concepts. And so that the politically correct discussion, the weaponized version of it, is also very related to the legal world, the world of legalese, and that whole world and that community as well. So
yeah, it's a very good point. We're going to take a break here in a minute, Patrick, but exactly, I just want to reemphasize that point again to analyze all these situations that you see, you know, you guys out there listening, you know, do YouTube videos, you know, or write blog articles, whatever, you know, analyze the stuff that comes at you, you know, the TV shows, the movies, you know, expose those kinds of lies within the language that you see, and just begin to talk about it, begin to vocal. I mean, sometimes I see something on the TV or you know, you watch something that you've heard about, read online. It's like, all right, I got to go see that for myself. And you look at it and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe the level of manipulation just within this entertainment piece. And then you're like, okay, you go back online, you try to read a little bit more and try to see, is this being talked about out there? I mean, now, allegedly there are millions of people watching this show or that movie or what have you. And then there's like nothing out there. It's completely dead. And there's like, people need to get with it, you know, and really get on top of that, of exposing that and, like, you know, do the review on it or whatever, you know, whatever it is that interests you within that field, really get into that and help everyone else to kind of see through that. Because I've noticed as well, unfortunately, that if you don't bring some of these things to people's attention, I mean, most people are smart, but the fact is that, you know, specifically with entertainment, you don't have that, you know, analyzing kind of churn on all the time, if you will, kind of mentally. And so people might shut down. This is their time to take a break kind of thing. But your defenses, if you will, are wide open at those points. And it just goes straight in there and it does program people, you know. So it's really important. But yeah. All right, Patrick, let's take a little break here and we'll carry on with more here in a little bit. We have much more to discuss, by the way. We haven't even gotten to the points of, you know, the 1 year anniversaries of certain events coming up here. We're going to talk more about Sandy Hook, the Boston bombers and news on that. But we also have some stuff on Loretta Fuddy, very interesting. And also we'll want to talk about Mandela's funeral and what happened there. It was pretty interesting. But give us your website, Patrick. Tell us how people can, you know, watch your stuff, get in contact with you, and tell us what's new on your end.
Yeah, our website is 21stcenturywire.com. And we do have a YouTube channel. I haven't been really focusing on the videos too much because I'm working on a documentary film to be released in the new year that has to do with the foot and mouth crisis, which hit the livestock industry in the UK 10 years ago.
Interesting.
But 21st Century Wire, we're hoping to really scale up the website. We've been testing out new technology the last 8-9 months, and we really feel confident that this 2014 is going to be the year where our readership has really grown massively in the last 6 months. And so we really think that this is the time we're going to be able to scale that up. So I encourage people to go read the articles, share them with your friends on social media. I hope you find them insightful and that we're giving you a bit of analysis that you're not getting anywhere else, and that's what we hope.
Always a good perspective. I definitely appreciate it. 21stcenturywire.com. And you do tell us about the show you're doing now as well, Patrick.
I'm working on a new radio show. We've done about 12 episodes. It's a 3-hour talk radio show. We take callers. It's international. And it's a little bit different than a lot of the internet radio shows. This is run out of GMN in Los Angeles, Guerrilla Media Network. And Sunday Wire, it's called, and it's Sundays from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, British Time. And it's 3 hours, and I let my guests talk like you do, Henrik, like all the great hosts do. I don't jump all over my guests. I really let them share what they've got, and we have some in-house regulars as well. And people love it. They enjoy the pace of it. It's very relaxed and a bit funny. But for me, it's just a chance to unwind on Sundays after too much seriousness Monday through Saturday. So it's a good outlet, you know.
Excellent. Very good. Well, check it out, 21stcenturywire.com. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with more. Patrick Anderson's coming up. Don't miss all the material that we have for you on redicecreations.com. Vast archives of radio programs. We have videos and news as well. You know, the majority of what we do is for free, and we do it without commercial interruptions. We are not on a big network. We have our own servers so that you can stream or download our productions. We even have a website free of ads. So if you like what we do and want to support us, or simply get yourself or a friend or maybe someone in your family a Christmas gift, then you can sign up for a membership and get full access to all our programs in their entirety, including all videos, TV shows, films, commentaries, and everything else. In fact, if you do help us out, we can continue to grow and expand, and we'll be able to produce even more material, more analysis and video commentaries, and that's where we are going right now, beyond the radio program, of course. Sign up at redicemembers.com. It's quick and it's easy, about 3 steps. It's less than 2 cups of coffee per month, by the way. We have 3, 6, or 9 month subscriptions. We also have 1 or 2 years if you're with us for the long haul, as it were. So please check it out, redicemembers.com. Some of our upcoming guests include Amy Vickers, Terry Melanson, Randall Carlson, James Hall, Robert Bavall, David Talbot, and Robert Dewhurst. But right now, more with Patrick Henningsen is coming up after the break as we continue our conversation. We're going to talk about the Senate bill that's designed to end homeschooling in the U.S. and how winning, losing, and ultimately overcoming obstacles and conquer challenges helps to build character and self-esteem. It's essential in the process of making decent, brave men and women. And this is what the nanny state is trying to end. They're seeking to end will and the basic survival instinct. We'll be right back after the break with more.